February 4th, 2024, The Life of Rabbi Kelemer.
Though I said a few words before in Hebrew. I've been talking about Rabbi Kelemer for years now to anyone that would listen to me. Of course, I have my everyone has their Rabbi Kelemer stories, and I do too. And I'm happy to share one later. Just want to make sure Rabbi Teller knows that we're starting. Rabbi Teller, okay, good. He's here. Tonight, when I called the Rebbetzin Kelemer, and I said, you know, we want to do a Yortzeit shir. I want to do something for in memory of, you know, Rabbi Kelemer Zechetzak Abracha. She told me that, well, January 4th, Kaf Chet, Kaf Zayin, what's his name? Tonight. Chaf Dalet. Well, this is his Yortzeit. Tonight, tomorrow, is his Yortzeit. And then I called Rabbi Teller to see whether or not he could do tonight. He said, well, this is the only night I could do. So it was really great. It really worked out. He says, perfect. I'm coming back from America, and this is the perfect night for me to do it. I said, fantastic. Fantastic. It's Minas Shemayim. So, Rabbi Teller, you're not telling about the story, but if not, hi, are you going to mention about the story? Are you going to do that? What? Oh, you happy not to? Well, basically, this book, if not higher, is a very famous story about a great Hasidic master who, every time there was a misnagid that came to his shul, and the misnagid didn't understand where was the rabbi. Every day, the rabbi wasn't there, and it was slichos, and the rabbi wasn't there, and it was like getting closer to Yom Norim, and the rabbi wasn't there. Finally, the misnagid said, I got, you know, being a good misnagid, I got to check out this rabbi. I'm going to stalk this rabbi. I'm going to see who this guy is. And so he started watching him, and he went and followed him. And meanwhile, the Rebbe in the story was giving wood to old people and elderly people and lighting their fires in the morning and saying the slichos while doing these mitzvos, but you know, hiddenly, all hidden, all not in the eyes of the people. So finally, the misnagid becomes a chassid of the Rebbe, and they said, "Where is the rabbi?" He says, "The rabbi is in Shemayim. He's in Shemayim. He's somewhere way holy." And the misnagid said, "If not higher." So this is really the it's really apropos for Rabbi Kelemer, but I don't want to tell us. I don't want to take any more time. We have somebody here who I admire tremendously, who is my Rav, and I'm just so grateful that he came to honor Rabbi Yehuda Kelemer, Moreno Harav David Avishai David Shita.
There's a well-known vignette. There were three Gdolei Yisrael that were questioned, that were asked what the function of a Rav is. The Aruch HaShulchan indicated the function of a Rav is primarily to be a posek, to issue Piskei Halacha, codify things, concretize things. They asked the second Gdol, there are different Nusrod, which Gdol this was. And he said the function of a Rav is to inspire, to give exciting drashot, beautiful shiurim. And then they asked Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim Brisker, what the function of a Rav is. And he said a Rav is preeminently and primarily designed to deal with those that are forlorn, those that are weak, those that are almost helpless and hapless, yisomim v'almonos, and that's exactly what's inscribed on the Matseva of Rav Chaim Brisker, Rav Chesed. If I would describe, and I'm not worthy of saying anything, but if I were to describe HaGoyin of Yehuda Kelemer Zatzal, he was Rav Chesed. In every single sense of the way, in every single sense of the term. I'll just tell you three short little vignettes. I met him in the late 70s when he was a Rav in Young Israel Brookline. We had a short conversation of approximately 5 minutes between Mincha and Ma'ariv on a din in Hilchas Erevin. Fine. About 30 years later, I was a scholar in residence in Young Israel West Hempstead. I spoke 7 times in the shul. He introduced me each time. He gave a hespit 7 times. But the first time, he said that I met Rabbi David in Young Israel, Brookline, in the late 70s, and we discussed the following halacha Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Erevin. I almost literally flipped out on the spot. I remember that I had spoken to him, but that was the extent of it. The man had a phenomenal memory. Bor Sishen Mabi Tipa, literally. It was just encyclopedic mind. Incident number one. Incident number two. I'm at a chasana, I'm a Sadi Kedushin, in his shul, in Rabbi Kelamer shul. And there was an issue with the ksuba that I didn't notice, and Rabbi Kelamer noticed it. He actually gave me a sefer he wrote on ksuba many years ago. So he gives me a remez, gesticulates to me that he would like to have a little conversation with me. This is under the chuppah. And he tells the band to start the music. They should be playing. Very exciting music. He takes me to a side room and he asks me for permission if he can correct something in the ksuba. So I was astounded. And he told me, first he has to ask Rishus, since I'm the Rav who's Masada Kedushin. Number two, Misom Chol Yisab B'Shofit Aleinu. Who is he? That he should go ahead and correct a Rav. And he did so B'Tznius, B'Tznei Alechet, with such humility. I don't think I've ever seen such humility probably in my entire life. And to a large extent, I would say, if there's one quality that defined him, it was exactly that quality. I, Lahavdil, Moshe Rabbeinu, Avraham Avinu said, V'anochi Ofa V'Efer, Moshe Rabbeinu said, one step further, V'nachnu Ma, Moshe Rabbeinu gave over to Klal Yisrael, everything, took nothing for himself. Certainly he had many virtues. He was clearly brilliant. He was a holy person, a saintly person. His greatest virtue was his humility. We can say, V'ha'ish ha'goyin Rav Yehuda, onav ma'id mikol ha'adam asher al pnei adam. I've rarely encountered such anava, such humility in my entire life. Ha'goyin Rav Yehuda Kelema, I asked him once, you should have been a Rosh Yeshiva. Why are you a Rav? And he said, what do you mean? I am a Rosh Yeshiva. I am a Rav. And that's what he was. He was a Rosh Yeshiva, a Magid Shir, a Rav, everything. A Kol Boinik, Yisrei Eshkolos, from every single standpoint. But a Kol, with unbelievable, incredible humility, incredible Anova. His sensitivity to other human beings was mind-boggling. And I like to say about him that what Rashi quotes from Chazal on the pasuk about Teisatza Vachosa Meirachal Gudea Mayasalo, Miriam prophesied, the sister of Aaron, Moshe Rabbeinu, she said, my mother's going to give birth to a child, Yoshiat Yisrael. Ubeshosha Nolad, Nismali Kolabayis Kulora. That's what I felt when I was in his presence. A luminous light that was shed beyond belief. He was a Zokein, Sheyoshe B'Yeshiva, total clarity in Kol HaTorah Kula, total self-abnegation, unbelievable to meet such a Rav. And I say, I have in my, shall we say, own private litany of Rabbanim, he's among the top three. I won't tell you who the other two are. Top three of those that I ever met on the Globus. He may be number one, literally number one on the Globus. I don't think I ever met a man of such stature, so self-effacing, even beyond belief, as I mentioned earlier. So, Chazal say, Lo ha'mokom mechabin es ha'odom, ha'odom mechabin es ha'mokom. I remember going to his shul, and I thought there, I would see Rabbonim, Avreichim. I saw a beautiful balabatim, outstanding balabatim. I never rarely have met Balabatim with such a kavanah rav, with such a love, such an ahava that they had for this unbelievable individual. Absolutely mind-boggling. I'll just say one last thing. When I had that scholar in residence with him, he asked me on Moshe Shabbos, can I speak to you a few moments after? I said, sure. And then he proceeded to say, okay, I have a few ha'arafs I would like to say on what you said. He then sent over all seven sichot shiurim that I said, all seven of them. He knew them far better than I did. And he had what to say on every single one of them. Unbelievable ha'arafs. I was literally astounded. And that's what he was all about. A giant beyond belief. Chaval ad avdin v'lo mishtachin. Vayifin ko v'cho, I look around. Vayar ki ein ish. But here was an ish. A rov par excellence of incredible stature. So tonight we have Yedid Nefesh, who's going to undoubtedly regale us with many vignettes. Harav Chanuch Teller Shlita, we go back a fair number of decades, that's the understatement of the year, raconteur par excellence, connection to Gdolei Yisrael, of an intimate nature, writer Shein Kamo, there are one or two people who still read, of course it would be kedai to, if you want to have a lexicon and become familiar with the English language, you should read his texts, tour guide Shein Kamo, Shoah, absolute proficiency, Isha Eshkolos as well. And if there's anyone who could do justice to Hagoyen Yavidah Kelema, it's Yedidenu, Harav Chanuch Teller. Hashem should give him the strength to continue writing, producing, all that which he does, and Yitz Hashem, for many years to come, the Netzach Nitzachim.
Thank you very much. After this introduction, I even want to hear what I have to say. Thank you very much, Rabbi Thau, for putting this together. It's a wonderful thing. And what about my notes? And thank you, everyone, for coming. All my life, I wanted to follow Rabbi David, and so here is my big opportunity. I get to follow Rabbi David. So I'm very excited about this. I'm going to speak about the two speakers before me and what they work on, what they spoke about. As far as that story by Yud Lamed Peres, the Yiddish writer, in Lola Malaze, Obnishnach Hecher, it's not even higher. Don't forget, Peres was a secular humanist. He wanted to show that behavior that is courteous and it's polite and it's humane champions that of just religious rights. When it comes to Rabbi Kelemer, there was never a contradiction between Menschlichkeit and Yiddishkeit. And it wasn't even symbiotic, it was one and the same. Never, ever a contradiction. The Gadol HaTorah, who Torah governs everything that he did also governed that everything he did was Menschlich. And as Rabbi David said so eloquently, with humility. You have to imagine, West Hempstead, and I'm not offensive if there's someone here from West Hempstead. It's a community of highly intelligent people, college educated, and you have to imagine that on the board of such a shul, there's always going to be a few wise guys. Every shul board has a few people that see to it that the rabbi has a dynamic relationship with his cardiologist. But that did not happen in West Hempstead. They revered the Rav. They admired the Rav. His word was Mipia Gvura. They didn't have any challenge with what Rabbi Kelemer did. Let me try and give some background to Rabbi Kelemer. Rabbi Kelemer was born in 1946, which technically makes him a baby boomer. At that time, there were 12 million American troops coming back from the East, from the European theater, from the Asian theater, shucking their uniforms. And it's a time of new beginnings. There's a lot of optimism. If you know the image of Rosie the Riveter, and even especially Norman Rockwell's version of it, making it look like from Sistine Chapel, like Isaiah. It is not the time that seems so apropos to develop an Adam Gadol. Because what's happening in America in the 50s? Joe DiMaggio has not yet retired from baseball. A new franchise opens up in Illinois called McDonald's. The craze of America is the hula hoop. And the heartthrob of America is a name I cannot say in a shul, in front of a Rosh Hashiva. But if you know anatomy, it sounds like pelvis. Now, Yehuda Kelemer was born in Miami. The family moves to Los Angeles. Now, what I'm going to tell you, his brother, who's a student in Yeshiva University, his older brother, realizes, my mission in life is to get my younger brother Yehuda into yeshiva. For he is convinced, if I get him into yeshiva, it will change the face of Jewry. But this is an august challenge. He's on the West Coast. That's a transcontinental trip. The kid's not interested in traveling, nor are his parents interested. How is he going to pull this off? This scheme is so ambitious. It is so harebrained. It is so out of the box, which reminds me of a story. A disgruntled worker went to his boss's funeral, and he walks over to the casket, and he says, okay, Gary, now who's thinking outside of the box? His plan was, get his younger brother, who's a ninth grader, to study Tanakh. Then he will enroll in Chidona Tanakh, and he'll win, and then all expenses paid, he'll travel to the East Coast. And that's exactly what happens. He comes to New York, and he right away channels him to Nashville and Baltimore. Now, we're talking about a pretty serious wardrobe overhaul. Miami, Los Angeles, shorts, t-shirt. We can call Nei Yisrael school clothes. Maybe even Technicolor. And then comes Pesach, Ben Ezmanim, what to do with him? He can't send him back to the West Coast. That's not going to happen. So he sends him up to his grandparents in Detroit. In Detroit, Avram Mordechai Yisbi, who later will become Hagoyin Avram Mordechai Yisbi, when the Goyim of Yushalayim, a Gera Chassid, sees this kid and he says, you don't belong in Israel, you belong in Tells. Now, he didn't really ask him, he sort of told him, this is where you're going. So we have words for this, but he takes him by bus on the Greyhound from Detroit to Cleveland. Now we're going to Tells. We've entered the realm of monochrome. Now he's not yet bought into this whole yeshiva shtick. But as he gets off the bus, he sees the boys from Tells are playing baseball. And Yankel Cohn, from the greatest Gaonim of Tells, because Masvid was nifter this year, hits a home run. Tarte Mashma, a real home run. And he then leaves behind himself black and white Kansas. He opens the door of the Beis Medrash, and he hears the sing-song of learning, and it's goosebump territory. That rumble from childhood. When you make a decision, I'm going to go forward and ascend, and not come back. And he comes from Chassidish of Forebears. He's a 10th generation of Baal Shem Tov. Are pushing. AC, huh? Pushing at his back. He enters Beis Medrash. Now, there's many aspects to the Rabbi Kelemer story, which the Rabbi David already alluded to, which are very hard to comprehend. It's not usual for a Rosh Yeshiva caliber Gadol to be the rabbi in a young Israel Shul. Also, from his wedding, also, where do we ever hear of? I mean, it is common, I bet in this very room, there are people who married the sister of a chavrusa, or the sister of a yeshiva chum, or the other way around if you want. But when did you ever hear of a roommate switching a roommate for a new roommate? In other words, his roommate entails Chaim Valken, Zechon Levracha, recommended his roommate to be his new roommate. I just confused you for no reason. Anyway, that's very unusual to recommend a new roommate, a roommate to be a new roommate for his sister. He marries the daughter of a guy named Shmuel Valken, and then inexplicably, basically from Sheva Brachos, they travel to Eretz Yisrael. In 1966, the neighborhoods we associate and affiliate with adjacent to the Mir, such as Arzei HaBira, Malot Dafna, Ramat Eshkol, Sanjurim Rechevet, not only did they not yet exist, they're not even under Israeli sovereignty. Now, how is he going to pay the bill of learning in yeshiva? So, if you're like me, 27 years old, then perhaps you'll remember, in those days in Israel, there was, at a premium, was toilet paper and aluminum foil. So, Keynesian Kelemer finance is, if I am able to import toilet paper and aluminum foil, then I should be able to make some lira to keep myself in yeshiva. Now you can ask, how did he figure out something that the Ministry of Finance and Industry could not figure out how to import? And the answer was that his father-in-law was the one in charge of the Greek line. This is before the days that people flew to Israel, or it wasn't common to fly to Israel. And the cheapest way for Yeshiva Bachar to get to Israel was to take a boat. So if you took a boat and you became the Mashgiach, then there was no car fare. You also didn't get paid anything. And you could also schlep things, and there's no imposition, and there's no weight restriction or space restriction. It was a good plan. I mean, it was a plan that could have made money. Rabbi Kelemer was great at selling Torah. He was great at honing sensitivity. But as a seicher, gainfully employed, he wasn't very good. And it didn't work. He returned to America. After sitting on a weekly basis with Rav Eliashiv, and Rav Eliashiv said about him, you can rely on his psukim. Maybe that doesn't sound like the greatest compliment. It was the greatest compliment. Rav Eliashiv authorized his psukim. And Rabbi Keller became a posek of enormous stature. So much so, Dani Zivotofsky, I don't know if you know that name, but a name you've probably heard of is Ari Zivotofsky. Ari Zivotofsky of Jerusalem passport fame. Okay, Ari Zivotofsky, son Menachem, was the youngest pro bono case taken by Nat and Lisa Lewin. And this case came for the Supreme Court 2 times that he should have written in his passport, born in Jerusalem, Israel. I'm blessed with 18 children, and it says in their passport, Jerusalem, with no state, no country, just Jerusalem. But his case came for the Supreme Court. Anyways, his brother, Dani Zivotofsky, was and is a large animal veterinarian. Among his clients was the Ringling Brothers Barnum Bailey Circus, the Thoroughbreds of Belmont Racetrack, and he came home one intercession from veterinarian school, and he asked Rabbi Kelemer a shayla about neutering. You have to imagine that neutering is a subject that is somewhat esoteric, abstract, obtuse, not frontline halacha. Did I mention esoteric? And Rabbi Kelemer said, at the tip of his fingertips, Evan Ezer, Pischei Tshuva, Simon Hay, Sifkot Nalef, like that. And wherever you asked him, not only did he know the psak, but he had what Rabbi J.J. Schachter said, he had the magic to make a psak work. Therefore, people started calling him with their shilas. Truthfully, he was just not the kind of person you called at a conventional garden variety, 7 o'clock in the evening. To get through, you'd have to call at 1 o'clock in the morning. Now, he had 1 o'clock, which then became 2 o'clock, which then became 3 o'clock. He had in his pocket at least 4 phones that were always dangling and ringing. Not to be a hawker, but he always bought a phone and then would lose the charger, then lose the phone, buy another phone, get another charger, and another phone, knuckle phone. He always had so many phones, so much so, one time he landed and he had experienced sharp inner ear pain, and he knew that his flying days were over. So wherever he would travel, he would go by car or take a train. One time he was traveling to Washington, and he had to an Amtrak, and they said that he was on a first-name basis with the lost and found in Amtrak and Penn Station. He was always losing his phones. And he had 4 phones charging. He was speaking always on a different phone. And the woman sitting across from him was amazed, agog, a Twitter, slack-jawed, totally incredulous. At the end, she finally said, "Are you my senator?" Just could not believe a person could be so involved in all these phone calls. But he was answering the shilohs of the world, which required sensitivity, which required to make a psak work. I am sensitive to the fact that we have go the full 3 hours. Thank you very much, Aisy. Like 10 more minutes? Does that sound appropriate? No, there's other speakers. We have around 17, 18 more speakers. Okay, so the magic of making a psak work. So I mentioned that he would take a train. The other thing was, he would drive. Now, this is super ape class, or Shivi will forgive me, but everyone knew he was just simply a terrible driver. There's no other nice way of saying it. He was a terrible driver. Now, his son Beryl told me, it's not totally his fault. He was taught how to drive by the Bachram and Tells. So these were, these are the Rebbe, you can imagine who the Talmud is. And there is, we can say this is Shivish. There was the Heftza and the Gavra. He was a bad driver. Now, the Heftza, he drove always what's called in the colloquial parlance a yeshiva shakar, an alta jalapi that seemed to have the comfort of something engineered by John Deere and the aerodynamics of the Hoover Dam. And it was old and alta and break down all the time. And finally the shul couldn't take it, and they bought him a new car. Zolstamein in a new car. They bought him a Chevy Malibu. For those not familiar, that's akin to a Ria Kia. A Kia Ria. I assume that's very cheap because I just rented it in America. It was the cheapest one I could get. And then the next day he shows up in shul with his alta jalapi. He said, Rabbi Kellermer, how did you pull this off? He knew how to turn straw into gold. But how do you spin gold into straw? He said, I can't drive a new car. There's people in the community who can't pay schar lelud. There's people in the community who can't send the kids to summer camp. And I'm going to buy a new car. I'm going to drive a new car. And they tried also to raise his salary for his ever-expanding family. He said, there's people who can't pay their electric bill. I'm going to take a higher salary? And he wouldn't do it. He was a shvera baldover. It wasn't so easy to get him to do what you wanted him to do. Because he had the rigidity with halacha to be firm, to be accurate and allegiant, but always a sensitivity to make a psak work. I just want to tell perhaps a few stories about his sensitivity and caring for others. He, during Hurricane Sandy, there was a woman from West Hempstead who would visit her mother in the hospital every single day. Her mother was in the hospital in the city. She called, Ma, I'm so sorry, but there's no way to travel in this weather. I can't come today. She said, don't worry, she said. Rabbi Kellermer's here. Rabbi Kellermer! I got to speak to him. He said, Rabbi Kellermer, how did you get there? He said, I was in the neighborhood, so I stopped in. And he said so nonchalantly, it actually sounded true. And said, don't worry, we're singing Majeser Nigunim. We're in good hands, don't worry, it's in good hands. He went to see a woman who in the city in a hospital, and she was, it was all hands on shilas. And he finally left as late as he possibly could on Erev Shabbos. It was pouring rain. And he goes outside, he gets into a cab. Now, have you ever been on a highway or stuck in traffic on an Erev Shabbos? Okay, I'm seeing that nod. And you're smiling. That's the wrong expression. You age at least 5 years. I have seared into my memory being in the Gothel's Bridge with at least 12 of my kids on an Erev Shabbos. I thought I was going to Shabbos on the Gothel's Bridge. I get the screaming mimis just thinking about it. So here he is, goes outside. Everything that possibly could go wrong is in spades. The driver is very unfriendly, doesn't speak English, it's pouring rain, at best it's stop and go. He doesn't have a prayer of getting to West Hempstead, but he goes as far as he can. When he finally has to abandon ship, an appropriate metaphor considering the weather, he thanks the driver for the adventure, he walks outside and he probably says to himself, well, what will it be? The Grand Central, the Cross Island, or the Southern State? And he sloshes ahead. Now he's sloshing ahead. We're talking about walking miles and miles and miles in freezing rain coming down. Every truck goes by, splashes him with a tidal wave. When he finally arrives in West Hempstead, after midnight, there's a bacha there who wants to ask him a shaila. And he said, I just had a gewaldic walk. Gewaldic. A beautiful, fantastic, fantab. What could be fantastic? He said, I fa'efert of Geger's Akasha. A little background. In the yeshiva world, the ultimate, the bar, is Rebbe Kager's Akasha. And if Rebbe Kager couldn't answer it, far be it from us to even... I mean, we can attempt. Highly unlikely. Now, we can conjecture what would be the best place to answer it and the worst place to answer it. The best place would clearly be in a Beis Medrash with other scholars and a lot of Sfarim. And the worst place would probably be on the Grand Central Parkway with trucks waving tidal waves at you. And at the banks of the Southern State, his feet were in this world, but his head was prancing in Shemayim. A gewaldic walk. He was coming back on an Erev, and his cars broke down all the time. Usually he had better mazel than breaking down on an Erev Shabbos, but this time it was an Erev Shabbos. He breaks down on the Sunrise Highway. You will forgive me. I'm not from New York. And I don't appreciate the names of New York highways. They're very Orwellian and pompous. I mean, this is sunrise like I'm a ballerina dancer. If anything, it's sunset. It's this crevasse through Long Island, which is malodorous and fumes and farstunken and redolent. and nefarious, pernicious, Machiavellian. It's absolutely horrible. And there's so much junk that the cars are throwing at you. And they I don't know, you know, I just came from America. What right you have, I'm talking to you like you're New Yorkers, to call it the Van Wyck Expressway? What is express about the... I came back Motzei Shabbos from Jersey on the Cross Bronx Expressway. I could have crossed the Bronx walking faster than the expressway. And the pompous names also. Like, there's a story that a Jew wanted to get into one of these very waspy country clubs. And he applied and everything seemed to be going well. And he said, one last question, sir. What's your religion? Why not? I'm a Jewish fellow. He said, I'm sorry, we're all full. There's no room for you. You can't apply. But he was determined. He waits 2 years later. And he applies with one of these very pompous non-Jewish sounding names like Henry Hutchinson Parkway III. Good Mr. Henry Hutchinson Parkway III, what's your name? He said, Mr. Henry Hutchinson Parkway III, where do you live? I have an estate in Westchester. I raise horses. What do you do for a living? I have a seat on the stock exchange. Very good. Mr. Henry Hutchinson Parkway III, what's your religion? My religion? Why, I'm a goy. Okay, so he's walking along the southern state, walking along as the garbage bags and candy wrappers are coming at his feet. And when he finally arrives in West Hempstead, it's after 3 hours after Shul's already been closed, he looks like he just emerged from the Atlantic Ocean. There's a Shalom Zohar in the Shul. Now the logical thing to do would be to go home, you know, his appetite, you know, go home. But what wouldn't he do not to participate in a local simcha? He walks inside looking like he emerged from the Atlantic Ocean, throwing the Indian and Pacific and the Mediterranean Sea. He comes in there. And he had a very warm sense of humor. He said, I'm very sorry. I'm sorry I'm late. But the cops were all along the way and they're handing out tickets for going too fast. I had to go as slow as I could. All right. I just end off by speaking a little bit about sensitivity. There was a bar mitzvah in I don't know where. I assume it must have been West Hempstead, but not in Young Israel. And he wanted to wish mazel tov to the bar mitzvah boy and the family. He walks there. And the rabbi was giving a sermon, and so it's not to cause a commotion. He didn't walk inside, he's waiting outside. Meanwhile, a woman walks into the shul looking very confused. She sees a man standing at the doorway, and she says, tapping on his arm, is this where the bar mitzvah is? He says, yes. And she's still tapping at him, and at this point she's already tethered to him. And she says, he says to her, what is your name? She says her name, and says, what's your name? And he said, he applied with his legal name, Jordan. Jordan what? This was not going the way he wanted. He didn't want to blow his cover. And you have to realize, Rabbi Kelemer never went to Foggy Bottom, was not trained in the surreptitious, clandestine, conspiratorial ways of Sherlock Holmes. So he says, Clummer. Clummer? Clummer. Jordan Clummer? Clummer. Could you say that again? Jordan Clummer. It keeps changing. Clummer? Kelemer. Kelemer? And then she untethered. And she said, I heard there's a Rabbi Kelemer around here. I heard wonderful things about him. Do you know who he is? I heard of him. And she said, one second. You're not Rabbi Kelemer, are you? There's always that moronic, imbecilic, idiotic person there when you never want him. He said, this is Rabbi Kelemer. And, you know, he had this funereal face of sorry for your loss. And anyways, he was stuck. Sensitivity for someone. He continued speaking to her to make her feel at ease. Michal Talit lives in West Hempstead. This woman, like many other women and men and families, they plan a bar mitzvah for about 13 years in dreams and aspirations. And she even bought beautiful decorations she was going to put up in the shul to beautify the shul. And then the pandemic hit. Pandemic hit, and instead of having guests coming in from far and wide and family flying in, it was just a nuclear family. No minyan, no kriyas haTorah, no sermon that he had memorized. And then there's a downpour, a cloudburst. My copy editor asked me, does it always rain in West Hempstead? So it's pouring and pouring and pouring. And it's the beginning of the pandemic. And as you recall, in the beginning of the pandemic, people were scared of the shadows. Now, Rabbi Kelemer was in a horrific accident. He was rolled over by a truck. A miracle, he survived. A miracle, he was able to get back on his feet. A miracle, his head was intact. So there's a knock on the door. Who could be knocking? It is not pedestrian-friendly weather outside. There's forks of lightning. It's not even friendly weather for a four-wheel drive vehicle. But there's knocking and knocking and knocking. She goes to the door, and there's Rabbi Kelemer, standing with his walker, barely 180 degrees, in horrible weather, without an aide, without an assistant, and she can't say a word. She never saw anything more sensitive than this. And he said, I just wanted to wish you good Shabbos. And how proud we are of your son, Joseph. Her eyes were swimming. There was a lump lodged in her throat. And she just said, Shabbos. She closed the door. And she ran upstairs. She wanted to have an unobstructed view of the tzaddik walking away. She got there. He was gone. Off to his next angelic mission. Because outside there's forks of lightning, but Rabbi Kelemer had a crescent of sunshine. He was the ultimate rainmaker when it came to chesed and sensitivity. And kindness. I said it was going to end, and it's very rabbinic to end several times. So there was a woman, I can't describe this to you accurately, because Baruch Hashem, I've never experienced this, I hope I never will, but she had a knee replacement. I'm told that screaming soprano pain, and she was sitting in on her sofa with packs of ice cubes and ice packs and blankets and pillows, and then Shabbos afternoon she sees coming up with his walker up the driveway is Rabbi Kelemer at 1:30 in the afternoon. He comes inside. He said, I just wanted to wish you good Shabbos. I was heading home from shul. Rabbi Kelemer lived a block and a half from shul. She lived 2.5 miles away. I was on my way home from shul. And, you know, she ran and ditched all the ice. And then Rabbi Kelemer sees her walker. He says, you know, let's have a little contest. And the two of them are going around the living room. But he made her feel good. He knew how to empower everyone. Make everyone feel like you've accomplished something so importantly. I wish I had time to tell you about the Kinnus Bnei Yeshiva, but that'll have to be enough. I could recommend a good book. That I can do. I want to end by saying, as Rabbi Thau said, if not higher, Rabbi Kelemer traveled much. He went from Los Angeles to Miami to New York to Baltimore to Detroit to Cleveland to New York to Jerusalem, New York, Brookline, West Hempstead, to heaven, if not higher. Thank you very much. I just want you to be aware that if you are interested, the book is outside. I think you'll find it enriching. I know I will. And, and to make it all that more, if you buy two books, any books, the third one is free. You buy four books, then two are free. If you buy six books, I pay you.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Well, in discussing with a lot of people about the other evenings with Rabbi Teller, the word was that Rabbi Teller was amazing, but it was like someone else telling you about their father. And the people said, we want to tell about our father. We want to tell stories about Rabbi Kelemer. We want to be that people. And I said, okay, we have a lot of people in West Hempstead in Beit Shemesh. Who can we get? And I said, I know a couple. So I started making phone calls, and some of us couldn't make it, but we got two really amazing families from West Hempstead who made Aliyah. I won't take away anything but to say that Jerry's brother, Harvey, is Rabbi Kelemer's right-hand man, was Rabbi Kelemer's right-hand man, and their family is a true chesed family, and Jerry has a lot to say about Rabbi Kelemer. So, Jerry, you got your 10 minutes.
What, I have 20? No, don't push it.
Okay, first of all, I think that what I'd really like to do is thank my parents, Olav Shalom, for moving to West Hempstead and giving me the opportunity, and all of my brothers, my sisters, and after I got married, my wife and my children, to at least my children, to start growing up in West Hempstead until we made Aliyah. For the Aliyah portion, I need to thank Rabbi Findel, who is the founding rabbi of West Hempstead, who in the yeshiva constantly pushed Aliyah and I really need to thank him for that, Rav Meir Ve'Asrim. Also, I want to thank the other rabbis there, Rabbi Kanatovsky, Alav HaShalom, Rabbi Gold, Alav HaShalom, and Rabbi Leslie Pearl, also Rav Meir Ve'Asrim. There are a couple of stories that I had. One of the stories I was going to tell, actually, it's good I read the book first because I saw it was in the book, the story of my father-in-law. So that I'll leave for everybody to read in the book, so I won't tell that story. And that's a really good story. The other part is that when on our sibling WhatsApp list, all of a sudden I got a message that Rabbi Kelema had passed away. And I sat there and I said, wow, what do I do now? Previously, I'd lost a very close friend, Wes Hempstead, Bert Drachman. And I said, you know what? I'm going to write something up about Rabbi Kelema. And I just sat there and I started typing away. Then I finished this in like, I don't know, like an hour or an hour and a half. And I said, okay, now what do I do with it? I said, okay, I'll call up Hamodia, see if they're interested. I called up Hamodia and they said, yeah, we're interested. I said, when's the deadline? They go, 10 minutes ago. I said, it's finished. She said to me, is it edited? Because we don't have time to check it. She said, can you send it in? I sent it in, and Ruch Hashem, it got printed that week. So that also contained some of the stories that from the book, that I guess from the article that went into the book. But there are a couple other things that Rabbi Teller touched on with the car. So I'll fill in a couple of more details there. Because when I was on the board, we decided to lease a car for the rabbi because he was constantly breaking down in his jalopies and coming late to chasanas and everything. So we decided to lease him a car. Problem was, right after we leased him the car, we got the call, the car came in, we brought it to him, and about 2 days before that was when the war broke up, the Persian Gulf crisis here in Israel. And he says, I can't drive a new car. He said, the Israelis are sitting in their mamads. He said, I can't do it. I said to him, Rabbi, I said, it's here. I said, you know, you have to drive. He said, nope. He says, put it in my garage. We put it in his garage, and it sat literally in his garage for like 5-6 months until the war was over. When the war was over, then he pulled it out of his garage. But then we had another problem. He said, my wife needs a good car because her car isn't good. So he let his wife drive the car, and he was still breaking down in his old jalopies. So we decided to have another board meeting, and we decided we were going to buy the rabbi a car, Oldsmobile, because I bought it. Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme, we bought him. So we went out, I went to the dealership, we bought him the car, we paid for it, I bring it home to him, I give him the keys, and he says, just as you said, he goes, you know what, I found out there are people here that lost their jobs. He says, I can't take the new car. I said, Rabbi, the car's in front of your house. We bought it. We have nothing to do with it. So we said, okay, maybe we'll sit a month or two, and then he'll use it. Well, after a month or two, he wasn't using it. So we decided that we were going to raffle it off. And the shul had a raffle, and we raised money, and we sold the car. The rabbi went out, and he bought another car. Well, that car broke down, and the next day, I see him with a different car. I said to him, Rabbi, I said, are you sure you don't want a car? He says, no, no. He says, I bought this car. He said, it was a very nice boy in Jamaica. He says, I was driving by there. There was a lot there. He said, it was amazing. This guy is so good. He only had one car left to sell me. And he bought the car. I said, okay. So now I used to help the rabbi take care of the car. I look at the car and I say, Rabbi, I said, there's no inspection sticker. There's no registration sticker on the car. I said, did he give you the papers? No, he told me he'll have the papers tomorrow. I should come back tomorrow. He said, but don't worry, I'll go back tomorrow and get it. Next day, I call him up. I said, Rabbi, did you go back and pick up the papers? He said, you know, it's a funny story. He wasn't there. I said, okay. I took down the license plate number and the registration off the front dashboard. And I went to one of the local police officers that I knew, and I said to him, can you check this car out? He checks it out, and he says to me, he goes, where's the car? I said, why? He goes, it's stolen. I went to the rabbi. I said, Rabbi, you're driving a stolen car. He goes, well, if they pull me over, I'll tell them I bought it from this nice guy in Jamaica. I said to him, no, you can't do that. I said, the police officer said what we should do is just take the car, park it like 3 blocks away, and in about another 2 weeks, have somebody call up and say, it seems there's an abandoned car here. So he said, okay. So I said to him, what do you want to do now? So he says, I want you to buy another car for me. So I said to him, Rabbi, but we bought one and you didn't want it. He goes, yeah, I know, but the shul made $12,000 profit on the raffle. So he said, you'll buy it again for me. He said, I'll park it for 2 months, then you raffle it off again. He said, we'll keep doing this, and the shul will raise a lot of money. I said, no, Rabbi. I said, we can't do that. So we actually, we helped him this time go out and buy a car from a dealer who was reputable. And it turned out, actually, after we bought the car, we realized that the previous owner was actually somebody in the community that traded in the car. But, okay. But at least that car was okay. So those are the cars where the stories were the cars. One other thing that when I became a gabbai in West Hempstead, the rabbi called us all for a meeting. So at the end of the meeting, he said, I have to tell you guys, your job is harder than mine. And I looked at him, I said, Rabbi, I said, how could the gabbai job be harder than yours? He goes, because I get paid, you don't. So, and one other story that I had, when I was sitting shiva for my father, we got up, and the rabbi came over to me, Rabbi Kellerman, love Hashem, came over to me at the end, and he said to me, he goes, I want to talk to you separately. I said, okay, Rabbi, what do you want to talk about? He goes, well, you live in Israel. He said, there are two things. He says, one, he says, first of all, he said, the reason after 30 days you shave your beard off is because in America it's not nice, it's not proper, people. He said, if you're in Israel, you can keep your beard for a year. Boy, was my wife happy. And I did keep it. but then he also said to me one other thing. He says to me, when you're in Israel, he said, there's going to be times when you're going to end up davening in a minyan where they daven Edut Mizrach. Now, we had just moved to Beit Shemesh, and where was the mincha, only mincha minyan here? Maybe there was one in Nachum Menucha, but the main one here was in Ataret Shalom there, which was Nusach Edut Mizrach. Now, I happened to be saying Kaddish the same time that there was a very, very distinguished rabbi that was also saying Kaddish at the same time, that used to have a shul right down the street, and I think he spoke a little bit earlier. And we were saying Kaddish together, and he came over to me after about the third, fourth time. He says, I have to ask you a question. He goes, when you say the Kaddish, you say the Kaddish with the whole long Kaddish, like the Nusach Edut Mizrach. He goes, why do you do that? I said to him, you know, it's a funny story. I said, Rabbi Kellerman, when we finished Shiva, he came over to me. He said to me, you're in Israel. If you ever have to daven in a minyan where it's Edut Mizrach, and there's nobody there saying Kaddish Edut Mizrach, he says, you need to say their Kaddish. He said, because people are sensitive to their Nusach. So he said, you need to say that. And this rabbi looked at me and he said to me, you know, he says, I know Rabbi Kellerman. And I know he's a very big tzaddik and a big Talmud Chacham. He says, but I live in Israel. And I never thought of telling any of my congregants that. So this was definitely, you know, Rabbi Kellerman, I mean, when we used to go back to visit my parents, there'd always be a knock on the door Friday night at my parents' house. He would come in. He'd already came to speak to my kids. He'd ask them how it was in Israel. How's everybody doing? It was just unbelievable. Every Rosh Hashanah, I used to wait for that phone call. He used to call. And he loved it too, because he could call at like 1 o'clock in the morning. It was early in the morning there of Rosh Hashanah. He was up all night. And for other stories of mine, they're in the book, especially the one about my father-in-law. And my father-in-law passed away. And he was just a very, very special person. And to this day, you know, I miss him. And when I used to go back to visit, I used to come from the airport. I'd come in the car and I'd stop at my friend Bert Drachman. Next stop was another friend, Bob Shelley. After that was Rabbi Kellerman. And I used to stop there just for the hug. Just for the hug, he gave the best hugs, definitely. And we really miss him. And we should all remember him for the true type of person that he was and the family that he was. And also, his in-laws, the Wolkins, who were friends of my parents, and that's how Rabbi Kellerman got to West Hempstead. When the West Hempstead was looking for a rabbi, originally he came for an interview earlier on, and the board narrowed it down to Rabbi Kellerman and Rabbi Gold, and Rabbi Gold had experience, Rabbi Kellerman had no experience at that point, so they took Rabbi Gold, Alav HaShalom, which I'm very happy because Rabbi Gold also was very, very good for the community and good for all of us. And when Rabbi Gold made Aliyah, like his predecessors, Rabbi Findel and Rabbi Kenetatzkiel, Alav HaShalom, then Rabbi Kelemer came down after experiencing Young Israel Brookline, and Baruch Hashem, the shul took him, and Bezrat Hashem, that the current rabbi, Rabbi Gala, who grew up in West Hempstead, will be able to at least fill partway the shoes that all the previous rabbanim have there.
Thank you, Jerry. Now we have one more speaker. That's Herman Weiss.
Well, David seems batting cleanup. All right. So my bachatanim gave me 10 minutes. I negotiated down to 4. Really, it was volunteered by my better half, and fortunately, you know, when you think about Rabbi Kelemer, and you have the opportunity to read about him, you know, I've read your other books, and well, this one pretty much is true, spot on. I don't know the other rabbis that you wrote about, but there's so much to share, and it was touched upon quite often. About this dichotomy, this, you know, when you meet, you know, your top rabbis that affect your life, usually they're either an Eloi, you know, Kol HaTorah Kulo at their fingertips, or their sensitivities are off the charts. And it's very rare that you find someone who has both off the charts humility, off the charts sensitivity, off the charts a grasp of pretty much every sefer. Have you written it? And I'm not exaggerating. At his fingertips. And so, just to harp on three things about the cars. Everyone's been harping about the cars today. A friend of mine had a chavrusa with him on the phone, of course, because he's never in one place for a long enough period of time. And it was some esoteric sefer that they would learn together, and he would do it on the phone. And little did he know, only after the second or third time did he realize that Rabbi Kelemer was driving during the chavrusa. And more often than not, he would hear a scrape as he would take a turn to, and he wasn't looking inside. He did not have the sefer in the car, and he was knowing every single word by heart. And the rabbi and my friend just it was outstanding. And of course, it was 2 a.m. That was the set time of his chavrusa. One story that actually is in the book that I can say over because I was there. The last day of Chag, I think it was Pesach one year. Every time between Mincha Maariv, the last it's Kinos. The Bnei Yeshiva would come back from Israel. They would be just before they go back to the yeshivas in Israel. They would take 15-20 minutes, and it was a known thing. They would come up and they would prepare for the whole week to get up and give a shir to the entire shul. And they never spoke to each other. They clearly didn't check with the rabbi at all. But they would go and prepare. This one would do this Gemara, Baba Basra. This one would do this Mishnah. This one, everyone would have a different, seemingly entirely different topic to talk about. And they would give it over and give it over. And Rabbi Kelemer would sit right there. And then one year that I was there, they came up 15 minutes short. Okay, and so they had to wait until Meyer and Rabbi Kelemer gets up there. And he spins a tale that is the deepest, most comprehensive, sheer klali, I would say, with he was able to move every single one of the last five shiurim that they just said and make it into one coherent shiur that was unbelievable. So much so that one of the guys said a Gemara, and he says, "Well, you know, you were talking on Amud Aleph. If you turn to Amud Bet and look at the Rashi a third of the way down, and he quotes the Rashi verbatim, and the things that he had at his fingertips were just remarkable and unheralded. And I've never met anything like that in my entire life. And his ability to give it over and actually raise up these Talmidim." To think that they were that they were even able to be on his level, so to speak, at that time, that they were giving over these shirim, and his ability to do that was unparalleled. And then one more personal story that's not in the book. When our house burnt down, and we were coming upon the 15th anniversary of that, or 16th anniversary of that, it happened at 1:30 in the morning across the street from a Liebman, and down the street from another Liebman, and around the corner from a third Liebman. You get the picture here. Oh, and by the way, his cardiologist, he didn't have to go to his car. His cardiologist was on the board, so he didn't have to go too far to see his cardiologist. But now we're standing. So obviously the kids are all out of the house, and the fire trucks are there, and they're putting everything out, and we're at least watching it burn. And we're actually standing on Ari's front yard. We're standing on your brother's front yard because he was directly across the street from us. And my wife and I are just standing looking at our house burn, and you know, literally 3:30 in the morning, who's standing right behind us, right next to us, didn't say a word. Just, I don't know if you've ever, you know, bumped into him. He had his way about him. We just looked with his head a little tilted, just like, and he was silently, just his presence with us, it was as my wife was fond of saying, was just so comforting. And there wasn't any words of we'll do this, we'll do that, we'll do everything like that. He looked at me and he said, 8 a.m. we'll have a sofer in the shul and we'll rewrite your ksuba. Because he knew that it was, what else am I thinking about? Thankfully, all our paperwork was saved for Aliyah, and we didn't have to dilly-dally. But, in my top three, Rebbeim, clearly, Rabbi Kelemer was up there. I was open to Rabbi Wine growing up, and more recently Rabbi David. But we've had our share, and to have Rabbi Kelemer's imprint on us is something that my wife and I and my family are cherished, and we feel very fortunate. And I think I stayed to my 4 minutes. And I just want to thank Rabbi Teller and Rabbi David and Brian and Jerry for sharing their thoughts. And everything in that book is true. If you want to learn more about the man, it's legendary.
So I wanted to get Ari Zivotofsky to come, and he wasn't able to because he has a wedding. And I also want to ask Moshe Raymond, because they're one of the founding families. And there are some people here that I want to apologize in advance. I didn't ask them right away. Some said they didn't want to talk. The Tabers, I didn't get a chance to. I didn't know you made Aliyah like 6 hours ago or 6 days ago? 6 weeks ago. 6 weeks ago. It's like 6 hours. 6 weeks is six hours. So Mazel Tov on your Aliyah, Shavu, okay. And anyway, but I'd like to share one quick story. First of all, Rabbi Kelemer, whenever my kids would come back from Israel, that was the first thing he wanted to know about. He wanted to speak to them. And my kids have wrote about that in the paper somewhere. I think AZ wrote something in one of the magazines in Brooklyn. There was a whole page by Ari Hirsch, the fat name of the magazine. He wrote something about Rabbi Kelemer. But I was in DRS 1 year. I was the... they needed a sub to teach Hebrew because, there are not too many people that speak Hebrew in America. I luckily know Hebrew very well. Went to Keren Be'Avah and all of a sudden the 12 years of not knowing Hebrew, all of a sudden somehow synapsed and I started speaking Hebrew. It was like a miracle. I started speaking Hebrew. I had no choice because everyone in my yeshiva spoke only Hebrew. In my chavrei cheder, my neighbors, the guys who live with me, they were all Israelis. So, I had to talk Hebrew. So anyway, so DRS called me up and said, our Hebrew teacher went down for the count. She's on like long-term sick leave. Can you come in and teach Hebrew? I said, sure, I'll teach Hebrew, no problem. So I started teaching Hebrew. And, there were all these young rabbis there. One of them is Rabbi Leibowitz. And other young rabbis. And they walk in, and they're very hip. The DRS rabbis, at least them back then, they're a little bit older now. But they were very hip. They're cool. They know everything. They walk in and go, all the Gedolim, they're gone. They've passed away. The Rav is gone. Rav Moshe is gone. There's no more Gedolim Yisrael. It's all gone. I said, I'm like, guys, do you know who lives 15 minutes from here? There's a Gadol, the Gadol Hador is here in Long Island. And they say, "Who? Who?" And I said, "Rabbi Yehuda Kelmer." They said, "Nah, what are you talking about? He's a great rabbi. He's a wonderful rabbi. He's a sweet rabbi." Now, about, you know, when someone says something like that to me, there are just two ways that can go. One way is that your head is going to go through a window. The other way is for me to just completely, like, shut down and, like, not say anything, because it's just not going to be a good sight, you know, body parts everywhere. Just not really good. So I held my breath. I said, "Please let them leave. I can't handle this." Anyway, so all of a sudden, Rabbi Mel David, who was Rabbi Kelmer's assistant rabbi at Young Israel, who walked in. He was the math teacher at DRS as well. And I said, "Rabbi David," not related to Rabbi David, this Rabbi David, Rabbi Mel David, I said, "Rabbi David, isn't Rabbi Yehuda, at least Rabbi Kelmer, the Gadol Dor?" He said, "Well, I just tell you that every night I sit in the room with him answering all the easy questions. And anything that's above my pay grade, he answers. And a few nights ago, I was in the room with him. A few months ago, whatever it was, and the phone rang. And Rabbi Kelmer pulled out his phone, one of his phones. I have six numbers for him, Rabbi Kelmer, in my phone. Every time, it's a different number. He picks up the phone, he says, "Shalom Aleichem, for Shlomo Zalman, Ma Shalom Kvodo." And Rabbi David says, "Rav Shlomo Zalman called Rav Kelmer." And Rabbi David said, "I don't know what Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zecher Tzadik Livracha said to Rabbi Kelmer, but this is what I heard from Rabbi Kelmer. Lo Rav Shlomo Zalman, ani lo maskim, srichim lasot kacha, 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 kacha." In other words, I was right. They were wrong. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach was calling one of the Gedolei Yisrael. There are many more stories, and he was just the holiest, most beautiful rabbi I've ever met. And may his memory be for a blessing. And everyone buy the book. I really believe that anyone who reads that book will understand Pirkei Avos in a living fashion. It's a really just a tremendous opportunity to learn the Midos and Derech Eretz, and to be so normal, to be so holy and normal at the same time. We don't have too many of those kind of rabbis left who are both normal and holy at the same time. Thank you so much for coming. We are going to have another Ma'ariv Minyan if you want to have one now. The books are sold outside in the lobby. We have Chomton Kogel as well. And thank you for coming, Rabbi Teller. Thank you so much.
Is Mark here?
Oh.